following program is distributed by the Bears Barroom Radio Network. It's presented live over MixLR.com and later disseminated in podcast format on most delivery platforms. It's intended for all audiences. Never before in the history of sports podcast has one show made this promise. Draft on Tap will report on every college prospect pro scouts are looking at for the 2020 NFL Draft. Every one of them.
Sanders, smothered. Chase Young, another big play.
Montez, second and goal. Steps in. Caught, touchdown. The third passing touchdown of the first half for Steven Montez. One, there's Johnson. He's got it. Touchdown, Texas. An open man at the 25. A foot race for the tight end. There's that man again. Albert O with his second score, 47 yards.
Draft on Tap with Bears Barroom draft analyst Denny Shimon, your host Ryan Badgley, and featuring some of the most respected draft analysts in the country. Grab a beer. We're about to make history.
And making history is what we do on the Bears Barroom Radio Network. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Draft on Tap. I'm your host, Ryan Badgley, and we have an exciting show planned for you tonight. So get those offensive lineman gloves on as I introduce our Bears Barroom draft analyst, none other than my brother Danny Shimon. How you doing tonight, Danny?
Badge, how you doing, for my friend?
Hanging in there, brother.
We're talking offensive linemen, man. I love talking offensive and defensive line. This is where it's in the trenches. This is where teams are built.
Yeah, no question about it, man. I like to call the offensive linemen the road graders, is my little promo that I popped out on Twitter earlier tonight. These guys really are what make or break your offense and defense. And I'm excited to talk them up with you tonight, Danny. And we've got a great list here of your preseason top 10 offensive linemen. As you mentioned, you're excited about it, Danny. You know, as we talked a lot about the SU-Clemson matchup last week, and before we get into the offensive linemen, I wanted to get your thoughts on how you thought Clemson played going into the Dome, which has been a tough place for them.
Yeah, I mean, we had a great guest on last week, and we kind of talked about, you know, the noise factor and even the fact that the Dome has no air conditioning in it, which I didn't know until last week. But anyway, so all that, how Clemson would be able to, you know, tell, and obviously a hostile environment and a team in Syracuse that's going to come out hungry and motivated in the last couple of years has given Clemson, you know, a game, you know, beat them once and almost beat them last year. So I was looking forward to it. Obviously, you were there. You were in that atmosphere, and you took it all in. I think that the game was pretty good. It was pretty competitive for about a half. I think that the big killer, and you tell me, obviously, because you were there.
Yeah.
Was that interception by DeVito, that second half interception where they had just gotten the ball back from Clemson, and they
yep.
had that momentum on their side, you know, and all of a sudden that backbreaker. And the thing is, I had no idea, or still have no idea, where he was trying to throw the ball, because the receiver wasn't open. It wasn't looking like he was trying to throw it out of bounds. I'm not sure what his intentions were on that pass, but I mean, that right there, you could just kind of feel like, you know, I was in watching it from home, and you just kind of feel the air just kind of get out of the stadium, and the crowd just kind of like, oh man, we were right there. So, I mean, you tell me, you were there. How did that feel when that interception happened? And do you agree? Was that the turning point in the game?
I 100% agree. So that pass in itself. So I was recording, but did not post the video due to my inappropriate language and what I said.
No one swears at football games. Come on.
Yeah, right. It reminded me of the pass he threw the week before that I had asked Mike McAllister about in Maryland. His receiver, and now in this instance, the receiver was still in bounds, where in the Maryland instance, he was out of bounds. But he basically threw it, even if it had gone through the first defender, there was another one standing there. And, you know, it was a sellout in the Dome. The video I was able to post, we had a struggle. It took 35 minutes for my first video to post, so I kind of refrained after that moment. But You know, it really at that point, you know, once Clemson then scored the touchdown right after, we actually departed. And so did probably 15,000 other people at that point, because you kind of knew that there really wasn't a shot for this Orange team to stay in it. So, you know, but I'll be back at the Dome Saturday cheering them on, another home game for the Orange. But we've got some big games this week, and we've got some big offensive lineman prospects to get into tonight, Danny. And the first player that I want to talk about, number one on your preseason top 10 offensive lineman list, is Andrew Thomas out of Georgia. And your thoughts on Andrew, Danny?
Yeah, so going into this and making this list and actually judging offensive linemen as a whole, what I do is I look for guys that obviously have the size, the athletic ability, also the scheme fit to be able to project them into a certain, you know, system, whether it's a zone blocking scheme, whether it's a power gap blocking scheme, whether it's a combination of both. So a lot of teams are using a combination of both, where they're doing, you know, they might be, you know, predominantly a zone blocking system, but they'll put in some power blocking plays in there as well. So, you know, I'm looking for a combination of guys that are strong, athletic, you know, can maintain their footing at the point of attack. So when you look at Andrew Thomas, you know, first of all, I always start off with size. He's 6'4", 315 pounds. Going into this year, he's going to be a three-year starter, you know, having played pretty much every game he's, you know, at Georgia. And he started games at both left and right tackle. So he's got that position flexibility, which you love to see in these young kids. In 2017, he started as a true freshman, 15 games at right tackle, and ended up being named to the freshman All-American team. So last year, they flipped him to the opposite side, and he ended up starting all 13 games at left tackle, and it was a first-team All-American. So it's like either side, this kid can play. And when you look at him, I mean, what I like about him is that combination of the height, the weight, the build. He's got a thick lower half. And what I like about that is that generates some solid play strength. You know, he's got the ability to move players at the point of attack. He can fire off the ball and he can keep his feet running. Mm-hmm. And that way, you know, he's got that, like I said, that lower body strength to uncoil his hips and just bully defenders off their spots. You know, so you like seeing that in terms of the run game. You know, we're talking about the run game. He's a solid run blocker. I like the way he seals running lanes out on the edge. You know, he works well with his guard on combo blocks. He chips and he leaks out to the second level defenders. You like to see that in guys who are athletic enough to be able to get out and get in front, whether it's on a pitch to a running back, or if there's a toss play, or there's even a bubble or a slip screen to a receiver. You want to see your tackle get out in front in space and be able to do that. So this kid can do that.
I'm sorry, Danny. There's nothing more exciting to me than seeing an offensive lineman get out, you know, and lead the way for his back. To me, it's one of the most exciting things to watch in football.
Did you see this past Monday night game with the Falcons and the Eagles, where Matthews came out and demolished the corner, and that set up a pretty much an easy touchdown for Julio Jones. So, you know, plays like that, the athletic ability to get out of your stance, fire out to the outside the hash, outside the numbers, and get and sustain your block on those, you know, quicker, lighter defenders, whether it's a corner, a safety, a linebacker. You know, you have to have that athletic ability. You have to be able to maintain those blocks downfield. So, you know, Thomas has that. He shows that. He's got good hand placement. You know, I like the way he gets underneath the chest plate of the defender, and he grabs and he steers and to be able to out-leverage the defender at the point of contact. And in terms of, you know, as in pass protection, he's got, you know, good blocking posture. I like the way he bends his knees. He sits in his stance, you know, mm-hmm. This guy can shuffle, he can slide, and he can mirror. You know, he nullifies pass rushers when he plays long. So he's got the long reach. He's got those long arms. When he extends them and he maintains that knee bend and he keeps his feet moving, he's got the ability to really just, you know, block out any defender. He's got a good anchor strength. What I mean by that is he's got the ability to handle power. I like the way he arches his back. He forms a bridge. He sets and resets his feet, and then this helps him throw it off any sort of bull rush. So that these guys, how many times have we seen tackles being, you know, pretty much bullied back into the quarterback's lap? You know, the way he does it, he extends his arms, he sits his feet, he arches his back, and he forms that bridge. And that way he keeps that distance, or, you know, that space between himself, the defender, and the quarterback.
Yeah, and he was named the SEC Offensive Lineman of the Week after the week one game against Vanderbilt, where the team racked up 325 rushing yards. He's on the Outland Trophy watch list, the Sports Illustrated Preseason All-America First Team, the CBS Sports Preseason All-America First Team, the Athlon Sports Preseason All-America First Team, Sporting News Preseason All-America Second Team, and the All-SEC First Team offense by the media. So lots of accolades coming Andrew Thomas's way without question. And, I expect to see him, go pretty high in the draft, Danny, without question. I mean, a lot of offensive linemen, especially ones that are so versatile, they just have to be so enticing to these NFL teams.
Right. And then the thing about nowadays with the college game and the NFL game, how we've talked about every time we go over these positions, a lot of times we keep talking about how the college concepts are infiltrating the NFL systems, how these offensive coordinators in the NFL now are using some of those schemes. And a lot of times, the spread system was a detriment to the development of these offensive linemen, the way they were used in college. But now these guys they're so athletic, they're coming in and they're being used in a way where, you can take advantage of some of that athleticism, and getting these guys out in space, is one way of doing it. Now with Thomas, on my top 10 list, there's a handful of kids that I feel like have a chance or should be given an opportunity to play left tackle in the NFL. We talked about his position versatility, and he can play multiple positions, whether it's right tackle, left tackle. I even think he can play inside a guard if he needs to. But he's one kid that I do see him being given a shot at left tackle from day one. And, if he doesn't succeed or for whatever reason, there's always an option of moving him to the other side at right tackle or even moving him inside the guard. But he's a handful of the guys on my list that I feel like has a chance to play left tackle in the NFL.
And moving on to the number two offensive lineman on your top 10 offensive lineman list, Trey Adams, offensive tackle out of Washington. This is a big man, Danny.
You got it right there. 6'8", 327 pounds. My first notes on him was very good size and length. He's got some long arms. This is a kid that for the last two seasons has really been on top of a lot of draft boards, a lot of scouts' notebooks, if you will, or their personal draft boards, their rankings, in terms of offensive tackles in college. Unfortunately, his biggest problem is staying healthy. The last couple of seasons has really hurt him. The last time he had a complete season was 2016, where he started all 14 games at left tackle and was named a first team All Pac-12 player and a second team All American. Or since then, 2017, he only played 7 games and he tore his ACL. And then last season, he missed the start of the season because of a bulging disc in his back, and he had to have surgery. So he came back towards the tail end of the season. I believe the final 4 games is where he started. And then, you could see him getting back into that playing shape, getting back into developing into that top prospect that a lot of these teams and scouts like about him. We talked about his size, 6'8", 327. He's got good bend in his stance. For a guy that big, you see that flexibility when he gets down low in his stance. And in terms of, solid lateral foot quickness, he's a guy that can mirror and pass protection. When I say by mirror, I mean basically, mimic or, stay in front of a defensive lineman. We see those drills at the combine where they have an offensive lineman, mimic a defensive lineman, and they kind of go back and forth. That's called mirror. And they want to see him the ability to mirror a defensive lineman, in pass protection. He can do that. He shows that ability. Again, that goes back to his athletic ability. And you can see him even on run plays where he can flip his hips into the gap. He can seal off that edge defender. If you're playing some, a zone blocking scheme where, you stretch it out to the, in the play actions going away from him, going to the right side, he has a nice job of sealing off that backside pursuit, not allowing that defensive end to crash down the line to be able to catch the running from the back. So, that kind of stuff you see with him, the athletic ability combined with his size and his length. And, it's very, very enticing. This is a kid that, like I said, last couple of seasons was on a lot of the scouts' radar. And, but unfortunately, the injury part is what really concerns you about him. Can he stay healthy?
Yeah, no question about it. And that's key. I mean, it, being such a big guy, you know, having your legs under you, I think, is huge. You look at Trey, he was a 2019 preseason Associated Press All-America second team and a 2019 preseason All-Pac-12 first team. And if you go to the Washington website and look at his picture, he's got one of the sweetest mullets I have ever seen in my life. I think they like to call it the Wisconsin waterfall, if I'm not mistaken. So if you get the chance, you got to take a look at his photo on the team website. I mean, I used to love mullets. Like, they used to have a website that I used. His is top of the line.
Are you going to bring back the mullet?
Oh, no. I couldn't grow my hair that long if my life depended on it. So moving on to number three on your top 10 list, Danny. And this is a guy who came on your list late. Unfortunately, right now he's injured. Alaric Jackson out of Iowa.
Yeah, Jackson is a kid, like I said, is currently he's injured. He hurt his knee in the season opener, but he's scheduled to return, I believe, midway through the season. So he's a guy that's going to be able to come back and play a season. So he's actually the one of two Iowa guys that are on my list here, not to give anything away. But again, we're talking about a kid here who's got that size we're looking for. He got, you know, 6'5", 315 pounds. We're talking about position versatility. Again, this kid has played both left and right tackle. We're talking about being able to move guys at the line of scrimmage, you know, being able to generate that core power. You know, he's a guy that can just bully guys. I call him bully them off the screen. You know, that's what he can do. He can just run block and get the guy out of your screen. You don't even see him anymore. So I like seeing that. Sure. About him. He's quick off the snap. For a guy that's 6'5", 315 pounds, his quickness off the snap is pretty impressive. He can chip and release at the second level. Again, we're talking about getting out and into that second level to get to those linebackers, to get those run, set those run fits out in that second level, and maybe creating a bigger gain other than just getting, you know, 4 or 5 yards after the line of scrimmage. So he's got that, you know, that athleticism you look for. You know, I like the way he uses his hands. You know, these offensive linemen, you know, hands, leverage, power at the point of that, these are all things you look at. And this guy does a great job of using his hands and basically steering defensive linemen the way he wants to move them. He's got that length you look for. You know, he's got the ability to maintain his position between a defensive end and a quarterback, and kind of protect his quarterback. And we talk about mirroring, you know, being able to mirror a defender. He can do stuff like that as well. So for a guy that's this big, a guy who's got this position versatility and has got the athleticism you look for, he's another kid on my list that I think can play left tackle in the NFL. But again, talking about the same thing with Thomas, you know, he can move over to the other side.
Right.
He could probably play guard. I see him more at one of the tackle positions, but he's definitely a kid that I can see him developing into something at the next level. Again, the injury is unfortunate. The good news is he is coming back, like we said, and we'll continue to see him, you know, progress, you know. But, you know, Iowa's got this, you know, it's got a tradition of producing these terrific offensive linemen, you know. And, you know, he was, entering, in high school, he was a multi-sport star. Not only did he play football, he played basketball, soccer, baseball, and he ran track. So you're talking about a kid, again, size, combination of athleticism, the combination of ability to move guys at the line of scrimmage is the things that I want to see. I like seeing in my left tackles.
Yeah, he's no question an athlete. And he was selected as a second team All Big Ten by League Coaches and Media, second team All Big Ten by the Associated Press and Phil Steele. And in 2018, he started at left tackle in all 12 games in which he played. So he's clearly got the experience. Danny, could you see him? You know, obviously you mentioned him tackle. Do you sometimes think, you know, because I see it sometimes at the high school level where they'll start a kid at guard just to get them comfortable, you know, having a player come at them. And then they, you know, eventually once they've adjusted to that, they will move them outside. Is that something that you see could happen, you know, with any of these players where they start there and then they're moved outside? Or is that, you know, at this point in their career, is that too big of a change?
With the first three guys we talked about so far, Thomas, Adams, and Jackson, I see them getting their first shot at the tackle position because it's still a primary position. You know, before it was always a left tackle was more valued than the right tackle. Well, nowadays, guys, both your right and left tackles have to be able to pass block because of the way these defensive coordinators are bringing guys off the edge. They're bringing athletes off the edge. You know, they got, you know, guys who run, you know, 4.4, 4.5 40s coming in off the edge. So you need guys that are athletic on both sides. So I see these three guys, my top three guys, all three having their first shots at tackle. Now, Adams, I don't know if he can play guard. It's more kind of a projection, but Thomas and I think Jackson can move into guard if need be.
Nice. So moving on, in your top 10 offensive lineman preseason list, this guy, I love this guy, Creed Humphrey, right? He plays center at Oklahoma. Danny, your thoughts on Creed Humphrey?
Yeah, he's the only center on my list. And, again, this is a kid that when you watch him play, you can see why he's so popular with his teammates. I mean, this kid is, first of all, he's a left-handed center. I don't know. It just struck me. I have not seen a left-handed center in a while. So someone out there, if you're listening, let me know when's the last left-handed center in the NFL. I couldn't remember off the top of my head. I guess I could have Googled it, but I didn't go that far. But yeah, he's a left-handed center. Again, a solid overall, you know, athletic ability. A guy, another kid who can get low in his stance. He shows that flexibility in his lower half. You know, he's got a stout base. You know, it's hard to move him off his position. I like the way he uses his hands to neutralize and control a defender. You know, he can turn him out inside out. He can steer him the way he wants, you know, creating those lanes, those seams, those creases for the running back to slip through there. You know, he's another one who's quick to seal off. He can get out on a five technique. If you're playing a 3-4 front, I saw him playing against the 3-4 front, I should say. And he was able to get out on a 5 technique and seal him off and help create that crease for the running back. So, you know, this is a kid that last year played. He was a redshirt freshman. He played on a offensive line that I believe every single one of those players was drafted in the NFL. I believe every single one of them, last I checked, is on an NFL roster. So, yeah, and he held his own. I mean, a lot of times he was the guy sticking out. You know, amongst those talented, you know, other four teammates of his. So, you know, you can tell this kid is, you know, he's talented in terms of talent, and he's driven. You know, he's a hard-nosed kid. He's got a great name, Creed Humphrey. So you can see this kid is a football player, just a, you know, straight out player, and he's a guy that in center, you know, a lot of times he takes control of the formations. He calls out any sort of blitzes off the edge, or if he sees anything prior to that, he can roll protection if he wants, and you can see him, you know, as a redshirt freshman, you know, taking control of that, and calling plays out, pointing out to Kyler Murray, you know, guys he's seeing coming in off the edge and all that stuff. So you like seeing that, especially in young guys like this.
Yeah, he's a second team All Big 12 selection by the media and honorable mention choice by league's coaches. He was a freshman All-American by the FWAA and the Atlantic, an academic All-Big 12 first-team honoree, played in all 14 games at center and started 12, including each of the final 11 contests from last year, and he is a member of an offensive line unit that won the Joe Moore Award. And, I mean, to me, Danny, you look at this Oklahoma team, and, I mean, to me, it starts right there with Creed and how Jalen Hurst and the rest of this team has performed up to this point. Is there somewhat of an agreement from you with that?
Yeah, he's definitely a guy up front that sets the tone. You know, that's the center a lot of times is a guy that's overlooked on the line, I feel. But he's so important. He's so vital to a successful offensive line. Like we just talked about earlier, you know, he calls out protection schemes. He slides protection. You know, he'll if he recognizes something in terms of what the defense is trying to do, what the front's trying to do, he'll point it out to the quarterback. Because the quarterback, remember, he's already looking downfield trying to read the defense, and he's trying to kind of set up the play in his mind. You know, so the center plays a vital role. And you can see Humphrey at such a young age be able to take control of that, the middle of that offensive line. And now, it's his third year. You know, he's only a redshirt sophomore, but it's his third year at Oklahoma. Just a natural leader, and you kind of see that. Now he's got some limitations in terms of, you know, athletically. You could kind of see him, he's more strong than explosive. You know, so he uses a lot of strength to be able to do what he does best. But he's not an explosive athlete. So something like that. You know, there's a limitation there, but. You know, I think he makes up for it in his determination, his football character. You know, how many times you've heard about the term football character? You know, his want to. You know, he wants to be great, and he wants to be able to you know, he loves the game. He loves football, and you can kind of tell that in the way he plays.
Moving on to number five on your list is Tristan Wirfs, offensive tackle out of Iowa, the second Iowa Hawkeye. And your thoughts on Tristan, Danny?
Yeah, Tristan is the second of my Iowa duo here. He's another tackle that it's just a big body tackle. He's got a thick frame, stocky lower half. For a guy who is 6'4", 310 pounds, he's got real solid feet. He's got the lateral agility. He's, you know, light on his feet. You know, you like seeing that in guys like, you know, with that big. The other thing I like about him is athletically, he flashes, he pops. You know, you look at him, how quickly he gets out of his stance. You know, I like the fact that he's got flexible knee. He plays with good knee bend. He plays with balance. He's an efficient mover in the open field, meaning he's not a guy that's lumbering out there when he's asked to pull or lead. He's a guy that, you know, looks like he's an athlete. And he's got strong hands. I mean, this kid can, you know, he flashes his strength in his punch. He's got the ability to stand up defensive ends and neutralize their forward momentum. You know, you like seeing that. On the same kind of scale there, he can pop and recoil his hands. You know, so if a defender swipes at his first initial punch, he can recoil and hit him back again. And he has such nice hand placement. You know, he's got a strong grip, and he gets it right in the center of the defender's chest plate, and he's able to control and maneuver the guy, you know, using those strong hands and that strong punch to be able to, you know, neutralize the momentum and also be able to control the defender.
I mean, he's got a list of honorable mentions a mile long, honorable mention all Big Ten by both league coaches and media. You know, last year he started all 12 games at right tackle, you know, but he did. Now, was he injured a little bit last year? Because he didn't see any action in a win over Northern Illinois.
He may have missed a game last year. I didn't see that in I mean, every game I've watched so far, he's played in. But another fun factoid about him is he became the first true freshman to start at either offensive tackle position in the Kirk Ferentz era. So, you know, how many offensive linemen have come out of Iowa in the last, you know, under Kirk Ferentz? And he's the first one that actually started as a freshman.
Wow, yeah, that's definitely impressive. And guys, we're gonna take a little turn here and talk. Eldo did a great interview with Rick Saratella. He's the creator of the NFL Draft Bible, and he was recently named the advanced scout for the NFL PA Bowl. So, Eldo, if you want to go ahead and run that interview.
Why don't we begin by you telling me a little bit about your operation, NFL Draft Bible. I understand that you also have kind of a new gig, right?
Yeah, so, you know, NFL Draft Bible started in 2002 as a publication, and we gradually built that into, you know, three publication this year. It will be coming out, so I'm excited about that. And, yeah, the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl is in its ninth year now. It's, you know, one of the premier all-star games, I believe, one of the big three, and it had over 200 NFL scouts last year. So, you know, Dane Vandernet, who spent the past 10 years with the Raiders, is the new director of college recruiting. He's brought me on board to kind of help comb the country as we look for prospects, and we've got to assemble a 112-man roster, so we're really excited about that as well as I hit the road.
That is fantastic. Congratulations on that. And it must be a lot of fun, but also very tiring. A lot of airports and airport food probably, right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, one thing I do appreciate about social media, it's almost a checks and balances with some of these airlines. We've had to call them out and kind of keep them honest. And, you know, the one thing about social media is you can call somebody out on something and they somewhat have to reply or you know, their true colors show. So we've had a little bit of fun with that. But, yeah, we're hitting the road hard. On location across the nation, it's pretty cool because, you know, all of our scouts, we have a lot of the former Raider scouts helping us out, and we all provide on-location game reports. So you can go over to the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl website and get all of our game recaps, find out who's turning heads, who's impressing, who's on our radar. We have a list of 375 prospects on our big board. So if you're into the draft and you want a good starting point in terms of who the top seniors are, I definitely recommend that list. And, you know, of course, at the NFL Draft Bible, we're always keeping on tabs on the underclassmen as well.
Awesome. That is exactly what we want to share information with our listeners, gather experts like yourself and direct people to the various outlets so they can keep an eye on prospects and be better informed once the NFL draft rolls along. Tell me, in your early travels here, early in the college football season, any prospects that you have looked at and said, holy cow, this is a guy to keep an eye on?
You know, this past weekend, as a matter of fact, I had the privilege of being up at Chestnut Hill to watch Les Miles bring in his Jayhawks. And you know, they came in as 25-point underdogs. I believe they left as 25-point victors. And it started up front with that offensive line at Kansas. And I'm looking at Hakeem Adeniji. This guy has got the goods. A four-year starter at Kansas, made an immediate impact as a freshman. He's got prototypical size, big, long vines for arms, outstanding pass protection. And I'll tell you what, I mean, he just, you know, dominated all game long against that Boston College front. And then opposite of him was another guy, Kevin Cedar, that we're keeping an eye on. He came over from Ohio State. He suffered a foot injury early on in his Buckeyes career, so it never really panned out. He had some issues there, just kind of struggling with that injury. So he winds up transferring to Kansas. And this guy's tall. He's lean. He's 6'8", legitimate, 300 pound. He's a skinny 300 pounder with athleticism. And he started the past 2 years at right tackle for those Kansas Jayhawks. And then, hey, you know, you always love it when you go scouting specifically for one person and then another player pops off the radar. This Khalil Herbert, let me tell you something. There is no wasted movement in his game. Straight ahead runner, one cutting up. I mean, this guy's on the go. I think Les Miles found himself a winner. I know Puka Williams is a guy, a sophomore, that people are keeping tabs on for the future draft. And they actually use a committee type of backfield. But Les Miles loves to run the ball, luckily for Herbert. And that's a guy that just, you know, I really didn't know too much about him. And then I saw him in person. I said, hey, this kid is the real deal. And I'll give you an FCS guy under the radar. A couple weeks back, I had a chance to go to James Madison, and this Rondell Carter. You talk about a good-looking 43 defensive end, traditional hand in the dirt. I mean, prototype. You know, he transferred over from Rutgers, so he's someone that was kind of on my radar coming over from the Power 5 conference, now dominating the FCS level the past two seasons. So those are a couple guys, of course. Virginia, that same weekend I was at Virginia, I had a chance to see Bryce Hall. And you talk about the NFL scouting services that the teams use around the league. I mean, grades were all over the map on Bryce Hall. Some people thought day one, some people thought day two, some people thought day three. I'm here to tell you, he's a top 100 pick on my board. So, yeah, it's been a lot of great talents. And, you know, we're going to have some tough decisions here. You know, at the NFL PA Bowl, we even snuck down to North Carolina opening week, South Carolina, North Carolina. You want to talk about a game loaded with prospects. The one guy I will touch base on that people might not be familiar, this Miles Dorn. Keep an eye on him. He's just a slingshot at safety with the Tar Heels. Ironically, his father played at North Carolina 2 decades ago under Mac Brown. So a little bloodline history there, but you know, that's what we're doing here at the NFL PA Bowl, the NFL draft spot. We'll just get, you know, getting that on-location scouting. There's nothing better than that in-person visual.
That is awesome. On this episode of Draft on Tap, besides the interview with you, we're also going to be releasing Danny Shimon's top 10 offensive linemen, his preseason rankings. And he's got guys like Andrew Thomas out of Georgia and Trey Adams out of Washington, Tristan Wirfs out of Iowa, Alex Leatherwood out of Alabama, Tommy Kramer out of Notre Dame, Ben Bredson out of Michigan, Lucas Niang out of TCU. I won't go through the whole list. Any offensive linemen that you in your preseason rankings or that you've witnessed that you consider a top 10 preseason pick?
You know, in terms of our board, I think the one guy there that maybe you didn't mention was this Prince Tagovailoa.
He's actually got him on the list. Yeah, tell me about him.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he's big. He's athletic. He's got experience, agility. I think he's a guy now. You mentioned some of these guys an Alaric Jackson who's injured, a Walker Little from Stanford who's now injured. Mm-hmm. I mean, after Andrew Thomas, and I'll put Tristan Wirfs from Iowa in the first round for me, Trey Adams with the back injury, you don't know how that could go because back injuries are tricky. And that Nyan kid from TCU, I mean, he's another guy that's going to be a workout warrior. But after that tier one group of guys, I think this Wanagu from Auburn is a guy right in the mix that could be a high pick. One guy here from New Jersey that I'm watching, Will Fries from Penn State, he's a junior. I think he's kind of under the radar right now. John Runyon's coming back from Michigan this week. He's another guy to watch just in terms of bloodlines. And then, you know, I like this mom. He's only a sophomore, so he won't be eligible until 2021. But Daniel Falale at Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a large human being. And then Shane Lemieux is a guy here at the NFL Draft Bible internally that a lot of our guys really like. I mean, Shane Lemieux from Oregon comes up more. I mean, and that whole Oregon offensive line is on the radar, quite honestly. But Shane Lemieux is the one guy that really pops up a lot on the radar. And then, you know, obviously the Wisconsin center has been on the radar the past couple of seasons, but this Oklahoma center, they won the best offensive line award last year. And, you know, four of those five guys got drafted, I believe. The one guy who didn't return, he's only a sophomore, Creed Humphrey. Remember that name. He's a first round bound kind of guy.
Great. Yeah. Danny has him on the list too, the Creed Humphrey from Oklahoma. So, excellent names, and we'll be keeping an eye on some of those names that we haven't heard of before. Tell me what challenges you have as a scout in assessing offensive linemen, given the differences that most pro football programs ask out of offensive linemen and what college coaches are asking out of their young men.
Well, I think, you know, as NFL offenses evolve and mimic the NCAA offenses that we see, you know, on a side note, 9 starting quarterbacks in action this Sunday that hail from an air raid offense. And, you know, that used to be taboo. It's kind of becoming popular, but I'll tell you what, I think, you know, offensive linemen is becoming harder to evaluate as our quarterbacks because of this hurry up, up tempo, spread type of offense where, hey, you've really got to be paying attention now because you could be down a note with your pen and pad on the previous play, and all of a sudden these guys are running up to the line. They're looking over to the sideline as they're running up to the line. They're not even getting down in the three-point stance anymore. They're in a two-point stance. Hey, snap it and go, snap it and go. So I think, you know, one of the most challenging tasks, like, you know, the Adeniyi Jay from Kansas who I was talking about, I mean, he played pretty much probably 99%, if not 100%, from the two-point stance. And I remember a kid coming out of Hawaii a couple years back, you know, I was trying to sell him to an NFL team. He said, you know, we don't know if he's more of a traditional guy. You know, we like to run block or do three-point traditional stances. And he hasn't done that in 4 years. And I think, you know, that's kind of a big part of the process. You know, you got to try to translate, like, how are these guys mechanics going to be? How fundamentally sound are they? And it sounds like a minor thing, but when you're not used to doing it and just looking over at the sideline, looking at a sign, you know, people holding up signs and you're just going, there's really not a whole lot of time to get set, get into your stance and do that, rinse and repeat over and over again. A lot of time it's just hurry up and go, hurry up and go. So, you know, you got to pay attention to other things too. Like, hey, if you run a similar type of offense at the NFL level, how's this guy's conditioning? If we're running an up-tempo thing, how's he handling? Because I see offensive linemen, the offense, you know, North Carolina, they want to come and implement the air raid system this year. And I'm looking at some of their offensive linemen who, by the way, Charlie Heck, another one of these mammoth left tackles that really impressed me along the scouting trails, the son of a coach. I think he'll be a very high pick. But some of those guys couldn't keep up. And Charlie's 6'9", 300-plus. He was doing fine. But some of these other guys, you know, you look in between plays, they're running, they're just trying to catch their breath as they hurry up for the next play. So that's a big part of it too. So I think the position has really evolved and you got to try to just use your best judgment to see how it translates. And, you know, when you're scouting nationally, you're not scouting for a specific scheme. So you kind of have to just weigh all of the variables. So I think those are kind of some of the challenges when you're evaluating offensive linemen and taking a look at what they're doing. It's a lot different than what the traditional offensive linemen were asked to do.
Indeed. Big game this week, Saturday night, Notre Dame at Georgia. What's your take on that game, and what prospects, because those two schools turn out excellent NFL prospects, will you be keeping an eye on?
Well, obviously, you know, Jake Fromm is the big guy everybody talks about. It. Then him and DeAndre Swift have a chance to be potentially the first player off the board at their position, right? So I think Notre Dame defense has a bunch of prospects. Of course, Andrew Thomas on Georgia is another guy that, you know, we just talked about could be destined for the first round. But Notre Dame, they have the a pair of safeties, actually. The Aloha kid is somebody that I think has a chance to really move up boards, and Jalen Elliott is another guy on the NFL radar out of Notre Dame. But, you know, part of the evaluation process, we have a database of 3,500 prospects. It's impossible to watch everybody. So a big part of the evaluation process is building your network and knowing who to listen to. And, you know, this Aloha kid, that's a guy I can tell you, NFL scouts say, hey, watch out for him. That's a strong secondary. So Tony Pryor Jr., Notre Dame, I think he may have cracked our top 100 overall preseason list. You know, these are all highly rated players in the secondary, so Jake Fromm now is going to have himself a little game of chess with the Notre Dame secondary. And I'll tell you what, it's going to be closer, I think, than what Vegas is saying. I think Vegas is kind of leaning towards Georgia dominating this game. I think Notre Dame can keep this close. The quarterback is some flashes. And, of course, Chase Claypool, the Canadian-born Chase Claypool. This guy's got size. He's got speed. You know, some people are questioning if he has the measurables to be a top pick. I think Chase Claypool is a guy that, you know, people might be sleeping on right now. I think at the end of the day, he's a guy that goes inside the top 100.
Yeah, Danny talked about him on last week's show. He had him 10 on his rankings for wide receivers. And they talked a little bit about Claypool potentially being a tight end in the NFL. Do you see that?
You know, I can understand it, and I see where he's coming from. But I think he's going to get a shot to play wide receiver, because I think he'll test – his measurables will be sneaky kind of good, where people aren't really expecting So I think, you know, that remains to be seen. So we'll put it to be determined. But I get the point of view and perspective, and he's not the first person to kind of bring that up.
Any other game this weekend that you find intriguing or going to keep an eye out on?
Yeah, I mean, we'll go over at the Big Ten. Michigan and Wisconsin, I think, is going to be a big one, where, you know, you've got Jonathan Taylor. We talked about DeAndre Swift. Well, I think Jonathan Taylor is right there in the mix. I know our director of college scouting, Joe Everett, is got Taylor number one over Etienne, over Swift. So, you know, Jersey guy right here in my backyard. I followed his career at Wisconsin. He's been unbelievable. And then on the other side, you know, I don't know if Shea Patterson made the right decision coming back to school, just like Jarrett Stidham a year ago. His season's unraveling, where, you know, at one point, people thought Stidham could be a first-round pick. I know people were kind of pounding the table for Patterson to declare early this past draft. And, you know, I think he may have been a potential mid-round selection. And now after his performance this year, you know, we're wondering, will he even be drafted? So, you know, we've seen his draft stock kind of falter here as the QB big board has kind of been solidified with big names and Tua and Herbert and Fromm, and I'll throw Jordan Love in there as tier one guys. But after that, there's been a lot of movement. This Joe Burrows from LSU is skyrocketing now up the board. I think he's in that next group. Steven Montez from Colorado is a guy, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes day two. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes undrafted. And Shea Patterson is in that category now. So I think, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, we talked about Runyon, the offensive lineman. They got a cornerback there, Levert Hill, I think, who could be a solid slot player at the next level for Michigan. And then, of course, I mean, anytime you can get a Wisconsin offensive lineman, you know, you get a polished player. And the center there, I know he's had some injury history in the past, which is why I believe he did not declare last year because of the injury. So we'll be keeping an eye on how he responds there against that Michigan defensive front and Don Brown's defense.
Any other college football story intriguing you after, what, 3-4 weeks of the college football season?
Yeah, you know, I'll be in Pittsburgh on Saturday for the UCF matchup. And, you know, this UCF train just keeps rolling. Scott Frost got them to new heights, and now this Josh Heupel comes in and has got them grooving. And they've got a true freshman quarterback there, I think, by the name of Gabriel. Of course, Winbush came over from Notre Dame. And Heupel refuses to name a starter, but this Hawaiian kid, all of a sudden, these abundance of starting quarterbacks coming out of Hawaii, whether it's Mariota or Tua, Mackenzie Milton, who was the starting quarterback there at UCF before him. He's another one of these Hawaiian natives. I think he had like 387 passing yards or 3, 4, 5 touchdowns this past week. I guess what I'm getting to is there's a lot of hype around this UCF team. And, you know, it looks like they could run the table. Cincinnati, Houston, Temple might be some teams standing in the way, but there's a good chance this team runs the table, and I think there's going to be a strong push. If they go undefeated, let's get UCF in that college football playoff. I'd like to see it.
That would be something, really would be something. Rick, tell our followers how they can find you on social media and where they can find your work.
Follow us at NFL Draft Bible, and the 2020 prospectus is available now. We got scouting reports on the top 100 prospects. We got the FCS big board. We got international players profiled in there. Our mock draft, over 500 players ranked. So if you want a trusted source of NFL draft information, we're used by all 32 NFL teams. We're used by the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl. So it's the closest thing you'll get to being inside a front office. If you subscribe, you get the in-season scouting, the on-location reports. So I appreciate you promoting that. And for the listening audience, they want to take advantage of our promo code. For all my podcast listeners out there, we run a 20% discount. VIP, Familia, all one word, all caps. And if you have any issues, you can always contact me, ric@nfldraftbible.com. I appreciate you guys having me on the show. Hopefully we get a chance to do this again. It was a lot of fun. And look forward to chatting soon.
Excellent. I know that Danny and Ryan were both disappointed they couldn't do the interview. So hopefully we'll get you scheduled again later in the season so that the three of you guys can talk. I'll be tuning into that one.
Absolutely.
Okay, Rick. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You got it.
Phenomenal interview, Eldo, with Rick Saratella. Awesome work. And we'll move right back into this top 10 offensive lineman list. Danny, is there anything you want to expand on that maybe Rick said before we get back into that?
No, just Rick does really good work. I met Rick about 4 or 5 years ago on some of the scouting circuit there in terms of the bowl games and all that stuff. So Rick's a real good guy. He's a real hard worker, does real good work. And like I said, it sounds like him and I kind of agree on some of these offensive linemen here, top offensive linemen in college football. So, but yeah, I know Rick does great work. Like I said, if you guys, look into his work and try and get all of his publications.
And so moving back to that list, number 6 on that list of your preseason top 10 offensive linemen, Ezra Cleveland, offensive tackle out of Boise State. Danny, your thoughts on Ezra Cleveland?
Yeah, this is a kid that caught my eye really last year when I was watching some of the running backs, Madison's tape. And every time I looked over, and this number 76, the left tackle, Cleveland, was just an athletic kid. You know, you look at his size, it's 6'5", 300 pounds. But he moves like he's, like a tight end, I mean, not that quick, but he's a quick, athletic, a slim body. He's not a guy that, these offensive linemen now, these left tackles, they're kind of bulky and kind of, a little bit overweight like a Tyron Smith, right? Tyron Smith is a more of an athletic left tackle. And this kid doesn't have the strength, the core strength that Tyron Smith has, but in terms of movement ability, he's got the feet to mirror. He's got to be able to. He can quickly get to his set point in terms of whether he's shuffled or he's doing a kick slide. Like we said, he's tall, athletic frame with those long arms. His ability to sit in pass protection and kind of absorb what the defensive end brings him, just take him on and be able to mirror. You know, once he gets his hands on a defensive end, it pretty much the guy gets blocked, and there's no way they can get around him. And in terms of, you know, like we talked about athletic ability, he can get outside, and we talked about it earlier on those bubble and slip screens, and be able to, you know, get out to the edge and you know, do some work at the second level, get to a linebacker, get to a cornerback, and you know, flatten them and give the running back a lane or a crease to get through. So, you know, just the more I watch of this kid, the more I'm impressed. And this is another kid that I feel will be an NFL left tackle when he gets drafted, you know, whether it's this season or next season. But he's a 3-year starter, you know, started all 14 games as a redshirt freshman and was named an All Mountain West honorable mention. So, you know, just thrown right there, baptism by fire, you know, just thrown right there, and he's athletic enough, big enough, and long enough to be able to, you know, maintain and do a great job. So definitely kid that caught my eye. A lot of times this happens to me when I watch other, you know, I'm studying other players, and all of a sudden one of their teammates or maybe even an opponent pops, and I just jot a name down and I go back, and, you know, a lot of guys, you know, might not know who Ezra Cleveland is because he plays for Boise State.
Sure.
But you put on his tape and you see the how impressive he is as an athlete with that size and that length, and you could just see a potential, you know, left tackle. Now, if you talk about scheme, you know, I see him more in the zone blocking scheme probably, because he's a guy who can move east and west. You know, he's not necessarily a guy who will generate that power and create movement up front with his, you know, power.
Sure.
But he's more of a guy that's going to use his athletic ability, his quick feet, his lateral agility to be able to block in, you know, on the move and block in space.
Yeah, and he was part of a Bronco line that produced a 1,000-yard rusher for the 10th straight season. And, you know, playing left tackle, he was doing it for the Mountain West Player of the Year and Brett Rypien, as the Bronco passing offense ranked 18th in the country at 292 yards per game. So definitely a player to keep an eye on from your top 10 offensive lineman list. And one of the names that we heard Rick Saratella mention in that interview was number 7 on your list. That's Prince Tega Wanahanga. Danny, this name, when I saw it come across, I was worried about pronouncing it.
Well, the cool thing about Prince is he's a prince. He's actually the son of a prince and a princess of Nigeria. So that's kind of a cool thing. He actually was a defensive player in high school. So once he got to Auburn, they went ahead and they flipped him over to the offensive side. And something, you know, like Rick touched on in his preview here is the kid has got the size. You know, we keep talking about size, but, you know, he's 6'5", easy, you know, 307, 310 pounds. But he's so athletic. You know, he's got that length. And he's fairly light on his feet, man. For a guy this big, the way he moves, it's very, very impressive. You know, I look for that knee bend. You know, does he have that flexibility in his lower half? Can he, you know, can he do that? He does that. And he plays with a wide base in his pass set, so he doesn't get overset. He doesn't get, you know, rocked off his set point. You know, because he sets wide and he's got that nice stout base. You know, again, we talk about his length. That overall length allows him to recover on inside counter moves. You know, so if he does somehow get out a little bit out in front of the defensive end and he's trying to work back his way inside, he's got that length to be able to push him or nudge him and throw the defender, whether it's a rush linebacker or a defensive end, throw him off the path to the quarterback, you know, push him into somebody or push him onto the ground. So that length, you see that come into effect there. Strength at the point of contact for a kid this big, you know, he can generate power. You know, he can move people off the line of scrimmage, and you want to see that, especially in a run game where, you know, you can have a running back go run up his back and he can just generate 1 or 2 yards by just simply moving a guy out of the way. You know, he does that. And another thing is, I keep stressing is, you know, position versatility. This is a kid that's played both right and left tackle as well. You like seeing that. You like seeing kids that can come in and give you, you know, multiple, you know, options at multiple positions, not just strictly be a guard or just strictly a center or, you know, so on. So look at, you know, the Chicago Bears have a kid named Cody Whitehair who can play center, who can play guard. He played tackle in college. So,
yeah,
you know, guys like that. Dalton Reisner, the Broncos just took him this past season, I believe, in the second round. He's a kid that played at Kansas State, played tackle, play guard, played some center. So, you know, that scheme versatility, the more you can do, the more positions you can play, the more valuable you are to these NFL teams come Sundays, because they can only limit the amount of offensive linemen they can dress. And a guy who can play multiple positions and play them well is very highly thought of.
Yeah, no question about it. As you mentioned, Danny, a native of Nigeria, is the son of Prince Philip and Princess Onome Wanahanga, and he has 8 siblings, which I can't even imagine. I have 1, and I couldn't imagine having 7 more.
The prince is getting busy.
Yeah, no question about it. And moving on to number 8 on your top 10 preseason offensive linemen, not a surprise here, I'm sure, to anybody, out of Alabama, offensive tackle Alex Leatherwood. What stands out to you about Alex Leatherwood, Danny?
Another ho-hum 5-star high school recruit that Nick Saban just, happens to reel into, Tuscaloosa,
right?
There. this kid was one of the more highly recruited left tackle high school kids coming out. And actually, what was impressive to me was he came in as last year in 2018 and moved inside to guard and started all 15 games and ended up being selected a second team All-SEC by the league coaches. So, again, we're going back to – and this year is going back to left tackle, but we're going back to position versatility. This is a kid that not only, has the size, the length you look for, but it gives you that position versatility as well. And to play at a high level at the SEC, that's something that you take note of, and you kind of keep that in the back of your mind. But, long arms, powerful, lower body. This is a kid that can roll his hips and generate what I call people-moving power. This is a guy that can just, move guys off the line of scrimmage. There's no one that can really stand their ground when this guy gets his hips rolled and gets full power into his moves. His solid punching, he can knock defenders backwards. You can see him when a ball is snapped and he goes and he extends his arms. You see heads of defensive linemen, whether they're tackles or ends, they're just rocking backwards. So he has that strong punch to be able to knock a guy backwards. Again, we talked about these guys with the strong grip, be able to torque and turn defenders, seal them off or create run lines by just simply just, hey, I'm just going to move you over here, and he can do that, stuff like that. So that brute strength combined with that size and his athletic ability is really what sticks out to us. And again, we talked about position versatility, a guy who could play guard, could play tackle, you like seeing it. And the fact that he's doing it in what I consider the best conference in college football, the SEC, is even more impressive. He's a kid we talked about in Cleveland, it being more probably best suited for a zone blocking scheme where he can move east and west and laterally. This is a kid that's all power based scheme. This is a kid that's got to go run north and south, and he's going to just knock guys backwards. So, he's a guy that if you move him in, I can see him playing right tackle in the NFL as well. So, he's a kid that might not make left tackle is his prolonged stay. You might get a shot there, but I think, eventually he's a guy that can be utilized on the opposite side, on the right side in the NFL.
Yeah, he was also tapped to the Outland Trophy Award watch list to start his junior campaign. He anchors a tied offensive line, and this is impressive, that has surrendered just 1 sack and 69 pass attempts so far this season, and that ranks 7th. Nationally, and the offensive front has opened holes for 231.5 rushing yards per game, which shockingly the Tide ranks 9th nationally in total offense with 557.5 yards per game. I mean, 9th is nothing to sneeze at, but I guess I thought they would just be a little bit higher. But, they're not far off. Moving on to the number 9 offensive lineman on your top 10 preseason list, Danny, is Ben Bredesen, a guard out of Michigan. What brought Ben onto your list, Danny?
Another guy who's a seasoned veteran of the Big Ten here. And he's a kid, a 3-year starter, played 39 games with 35 starts at left guard, a 2-time All-Big Ten honoree in 2017 and 2018. Twice voted team captain. This is a kid that when you watch him play, you can just see the toughness. You can see that what he brings to an offensive line, the leadership. Besides the size, about 6'3", 320 pounds, he's got a powerful lower half. He's got that. He's got the ability to quickly get out of his stance. But he's a max effort guy. So not only does he use whatever athleticism he has, he puts it full max. He's always out there. He's blocking through the echo of the whistle. I like the way he chips and he releases into the second level onto a linebacker. You know, another kid here who can roll his hips and generate that power, that movement at the line of scrimmage. You know, another guy that I call a people mover, just, you know, straight, you know, he can just get guys out of the way. You know, quick to shoot his hands in pass pro. You want to see that. You want to see guys that are cognizant of keeping that, using their length, keeping that defender away from their torso and shooting it. And not only shooting it once, but also recoiling and resetting their hands once the defensive lineman has tried to swat it down or try to put a move on him. So, you can see him, do that in the middle there. And just like I said, going back to the beginning, he's just a tough, thick offensive guard. And he's a guy that's strictly going to be a guard. Athletic, I think, you know, there's some questions in the scouting community about, you know, what kind of athleticism does he have. But I think you keep him confined inside, you know, in between a tackle and a center and what I call a phone booth. You know, you keep him there. I think he does well. And, you know, he's not going to be a guy that's going to be, you know, explosive with athleticism. But he's a guy that just, you know, pure want to, pure strength and pure size will get the job done, in my opinion, at inside guard.
Sure, and he's a three-time letter winner, as you mentioned, the two-time All-Big Ten honoree. He's also an academic All-Big Ten honoree, so not only is he a great football player, but he's got the brains to go along with the brawn. He was a recipient of the 2018 Toughest Player Award, and he's played in 39 career games with 35 starts at left guard. So Ben Bredson, just a phenomenal player for the Michigan Wolverines. And at number 10 on your list, Danny, Tommy Kramer, offensive guard out of Notre Dame. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and again, a kid that last year, or actually in 2017, played right tackle, and last year ended up going to right guard. So he's an interior lineman for me. You know, he's about 6'4", 300 plus pounds. But again, another guy who's just naturally thick, wide-bodied. You know, a solid, you know, play strength at the point of attack. You can generate that power. He's athletic enough at the second level. He's not a great athlete, but he can get there and he can deliver a hit. But what I like about him, and this is something that goes back to last year's draft, and every time I've been on here talking about offensive linemen, I like linemen that have a nasty streak in them. I like linemen that look to finish their blocks. And with Kramer, you know, he's sneaky nasty. You know, you're like, you don't think of him as, you know, because, you know, Quentin Nelson was the big nasty. Everyone thought it, you know, saw some of those highlights and saw him do what he did, you know, on those highlights. I'm like, oh, this guy's nasty. You know, Kramer doesn't jump out on you like Nelson does in terms of his nastiness, but you can see him, man, he will sometimes go beyond the whistle and you can see him just bury defenders. If a guy's on the ground, he's not going to let up. A lot of these linemen nowadays, I don't know if it's, you know, is it the way they're coached or if they're, you know, they're just trying to, you know, show good sportsmanship, whatever it is, they don't finish their blocks. And that just, as an offensive lineman, you got to do that because you never know when a guy's going to bounce up and make a play on the ball carrier or whatnot. So you finish your blocks, you lay on top of if the guy's on the ground, you get on top of him. And yeah. Kramer will do that. Kramer will finish all guys off. And I love that about my offensive lineman. You know, he's the guy that plays with his head on a swivel. He's always looking for work. He's always going to look and see if anybody is in trouble, and if whether it's his center, whether it's his tackle, he'll go and help him. So, you know, you like to see guys that have that mental processing where they're looking for, you know, all right, I have no one coming at me, so I have to look for somebody else because someone else is probably coming, you know, someone else is getting a double team on the other side or getting two or three rushers coming at him. So I like guys like that, and that shows to me that he's thinking the game. He's out there not only, you know, looking to finish guys off, but also he's thinking ahead. So, you know, stuff like that, it really attracted me to Tommy Kramer.
Sure. We had a question in the chat from our boy George Bayless. Was questioning if you liked Tremaine Ankrum.
He plays right tackle for Clemson, but he's only at about 6'1 or 6'2. So he's going to be an interior, you know, if he plays in the NFL. He's got the athletic ability to play in the NFL. I just don't know at that size, he's not going to be a tackle. So, if I had to kind of project with him, he's probably going to be a guy that's going to have to switch positions and probably move inside. Now, I've never seen him play center. I think he has played guard before, if I'm not mistaken. So he's a kid that if he's going to go ahead and advance his career into the NFL, he's going to have to move inside. So, because I think he's only like around, he's listed at 6'3 or 6'2, but I think he's only like 6'1 but less than 300 pounds. So he's definitely going to have to be an interior offensive lineman.
Oh yeah. That's he's kind of small.
Yeah. He plays right tackle for Clemson though.
So moving on, Danny, we've got, I want to thank ESPN's Heather Dinich for this. We've got seven college games this weekend that could shake up the college football playoff. And I'll quickly run through them here. Obviously, number seven, Notre Dame, number three, Georgia. Obviously, that's a big one. Number eight, Auburn, number 17, Texas A&M. Then you've got, this is the game that I'm super excited about, but unfortunately, I won't be able to watch it. Number 11, Michigan at number 13, Wisconsin. Number 10, Utah at USC, Oklahoma State at number 12, Texas. And then number 16, Oregon at Stanford. And rounding it out is Washington at BYU. Danny, you look at those or hear me say those seven games. What are the games, let's say two games, that you're most excited to watch based on the draft prospects in them this upcoming weekend?
Well, Aldo and Rick kind of covered it. That Notre Dame and Georgia game, that's going to be chock full of guys that are going to be playing at the next level. You know, you look at Georgia in terms of, we just talked about my top offensive lineman. You know, Andrew Thomas is going to be playing against a formidable defensive front for Notre Dame. So that's going to be a good mm-hmm. test to see him there. Obviously, you know, the quarterback's going to be going, you know, Fromm's going to be going against a Notre Dame secondary. That's also going to be, you know, it's got some players in there that, you know, have potential to be NFL draft picks. But yeah, so in terms of prospects, the game, you know, I want to watch is Georgia or Notre Dame. But in terms of intrigue and it's that Michigan Wisconsin game. You know, I love these Big Ten, using an old term phrase, you know, snot knock them. You know, that guys are just, you know, pounding the ball. And even though, you know, Michigan is supposed to, you know, have brought in the new offensive coordinator, supposed to be a little bit more wide open. But I just think Michigan and Wisconsin, I just think old school, you know, my offensive line is going to block your defensive line and vice versa. And let's see who ends up with more points at the end of the game. So that's a game that, you know, locally that I am very intrigued in watching. But yeah, in terms of prospects, I mean, all these games you mentioned, they're all going to have prospects. Utah has a ton of NFL prospects, and a lot of teams are sleeping on Utah, and they very well could win the Pac-12, and they could be one of the four playoff teams. They have that much talent on that team.
Wow.
You know, their running back, Zach Moss, is one of my favorite players in college football. He was on my top 10 list as well, my preseason top 10 list. So Utah is a team that I think a lot of people are kind of taking for granted of, but that's a team to watch out for. Now, Oklahoma State and Texas, I expect that to be a typical Big 12 shootout. You know, Texas with my guy Sam Ehlinger at quarterback, who I think is not getting the Heisman love that other quarterbacks are getting. But anyway, and you know, obviously his top weapon, Colin Johnson, the receiver, and then Oklahoma State's got some weapons on the outside there, and then plus that their running back Chuba Hubbard is having a hell of a start of the season too. So definitely, I think that's going to be a high scoring affair.
Yeah, speaking of Heisman love, as I pull up some rankings on ESPN.com on Heisman, the Heisman Watch. I look at where they have Sam Ehlinger, and I've got to get your thoughts on it. So they have him on their Heisman watch at number seven. Do you think where he is a good point for him, Danny, or do you have him higher in your Heisman watch?
I know why they have him at seven. I think he's a better player than a lot of these players on this list here. However, mm-hmm. But I know why they have him at seven. I mean, because, you know, look at the guys ahead of him. The guys like Tua and yeah. Jalen Hurts and even Joe Burrow. You know, like last year, everybody's like, who's this Joe Burrow kid? The kid that transferred from Ohio State. Well, you know, Burrow's got some. He's got some talent. He's got some moxie as well. You know, going to Texas and be able to beat Texas, and then also, you know, kind of taunt the fans, if you will. You know, that's a kid that's playing with a lot of confidence right now. And heck, when was the last time we said LSU had a quarterback?
Right,
you know, that's worth mentioning. You know,
yeah.
So Justin Fields, that was one of my big question marks. Is I wanted to see how he adjusted and how he played, because, you know, he came in with all that hype at Georgia and then just wasn't able to beat out Fromm and then eventually transferred. And he is fitting like a glove at Ohio State. And, you know, though, the thing about Fields, what impressed me was, you know, we knew he was athletic, we knew he had the ability to create with his feet. But mm-hmm. but he is a very, very good, accurate deep ball passer. I mean, some of his throws are on the money, and they're like 40, 50 yards down the field. So to me, he has proven a lot in terms of, you know, his ability, his feel for the passing game, being able to be an accomplished dual threat, if you will. So I think he's, doing nothing but just, showing scouts and teams eventually, like, this is a kid that has a chance, has a chance to play, especially if we're looking at today's NFL, where we're looking at, athletic quarterbacks, guys who can, bring a element of the run game, with their RPOs and being able to create runs or being able to create yardage with their legs. So, Fields definitely has it. And like I said, his throwing ability has really impressed me. And I think Jonathan Taylor, obviously one of the better running backs in college football. So, Trevor Lawrence, and tell me, Badge, you were there. I was so far. Okay. Now I'm not saying he doesn't have the athletic ability. He doesn't have the size, doesn't have the arm strength. He doesn't have what you're looking for in a quarterback, but so far he has not impressed me to the extent of some of these other quarterbacks have, even to the extent of Jalen Hurts has, in terms of his awareness in the pocket, his ability to throw guys open. Now he takes advantage, and he's got hell of a talent in terms of wide receivers with Higgins and Ross and all those guys. We talked about Higgins last week, going up and taking the ball away from defenders, and lo and behold, he was doing that against your Syracuse Orangemen on Saturday night. He was going up there and just grabbing the ball in midair. Yep. So with a guy like Lawrence, you don't have to be that accurate. You can just throw the ball in the vicinity of the receiver and then go up and get it. But, he does show some athleticism, his ability to roll out and mm-hmm. throw, downfield, accurately. I do like. But in terms of his pocket presence and awareness, I'm really, and his decision making in the pocket, I'm really kind of taken aback by how he struggled this year.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Danny. I think his receivers do a lot for him to when he looks good, make him look good. His decision making, the two interceptions he had last week, they were just not good decisions. And to me, I think he's a little high on this list from ESPN. I think Ehlinger should be ahead of him. Maybe even DeAndre Swift as well. I expected, such a huge mismatch. I was talking with Shane, the smartest man in the barroom, about it. Their corners at SU are tiny, and these guys should have had a field day. I mean, yes, you had the 83-yard touchdown, but I think seeing the size difference, yes, Higgins, did go up and dominate a few times, but I think that's more the receiver than the quarterback. And a lot of time left to see what Lawrence does here the rest of the year, but where ESPN has him, I think he's a little too high in my opinion at this point in the season.
Right, and everyone's touting him as if he came out, if he was eligible to come out this year, he would be a hands down first pick in a draft. I don't know. I mean, just based off of these three games, look at his tape now. Now, if you're a team like, say, like Miami, if you're just building for the future and you want to take a guy in and kind of just, with the talent, with the ability, and you're just going to want to groom him, that's fine. I can see that. But if you base him on the talent right now or his tape this season, I don't think he would, he's played better than some of the other quarterbacks. Now, I think, obviously a lot of times there's projection when you look at the draft and you kind of project mm-hmm. how that kid can be and you take all that into effect. So, but man, it's like, I'm just, I really am surprised with all that talent he has around him that he hasn't gone off to a better start. Now, it doesn't mean he's not going to catch on fire and be lights out, but towards the end of the season, I'm just saying first three games of the season, I just haven't been that impressed with him.
Yeah, I would second that statement, Danny. The next story I had, which I found interesting, Florida's new quarterback, Felipe Franks, who suffered a gruesome injury last week. So the player that came in for Florida, Kyle Trask, came in. Now, he hasn't started a game at quarterback since his freshman year of high school. Danny, what is he going to face? What is he going to go through coming in and starting a game here as a quarterback that he hasn't done since his freshman year of high school?
Well, I'm assuming he's taken snaps during practice or during spring practice, but he's a kid that hasn't started since high school, which is a bit surprising, especially playing at a Power Five you know, in Power Five conference for a school like Florida. So what he's going to face is he's probably going to face some defensive coordinators that are going to be licking their chops to see what he could do in terms of, you know, pre-snap, you know, can he read coverages? Can he decipher what the defense is trying to do? You know, stuff like that. And then, you know, if you put pressure on his face, you know, how does he react? You know, will he throw the ball up for grabs? Will he, you know, will he do the Eli Manning move, which is just kind of throw and spin, you know, give his back to the, you know, will he do something like that? You know, it'd be interesting to see, but it's just a shame that because, you know, Florida under Dan Mullen has had done such a great job in terms of kind of, you know, rebuilding that program on the fly, if you will. And, you know, Franks was finally kind of getting his groove under Mullins, and I think was starting to play well. And he had that, you know, that pretty bad injury. So, but yeah, and he's playing in a pretty damn good conference too, you know, kid. So, that'll be something that we, you know, follow and see that's going to be, you know, if he does well, you know, obviously, you know, Mullins is going to get all the credit because he coached them up and he put him in situations and positions where he succeeded and you have to worry about his inexperience or anything like that. You know, if he struggles, then they're just going to say, you know what, this is a kid that hadn't started since high school. So, you know, what do you expect?
Moving on and to wind down the show here. So our last story, this is one that we tried to get Carson King on tonight. Unfortunately, we didn't hear from him. But this is a story, a badge of honor type story. And we are going to award Carson King our badge of honor for this week. So how all this started, Carson King was at College game day for last week's Iowa State game, and he brought a sign asking for money to replenish his beer supply. Well, we're Bears Bar Room. We drink beer amongst many other kinds of alcohol. He never thought asking for money to replace his beer would take off the way it had, but it resulted in more than $67,000 being sent to his personal Venmo account and a swarm of social media responses. Basically, his initial tweet that declared his intention to donate the money to the University of Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital went viral and not only caught the attention of Anheuser-Busch, it also caught the attention of Venmo, and they both pledged to max King's donation. So as of Thursday night, it had reached $67,000, and that means that the Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital, between that money and what Anheuser-Busch and Venmo are going to donate, that means $200,000 will be donated to the University of the Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital. And not only that, for King, who is a diehard Iowa State fan, he's also not going to have to worry about replenishing his beer anymore because Anheuser-Busch is going to take care of him as well. So, Carson King, a badge of honor for you. If you happen to hear this, we sent you a DM earlier. If you see it, we'd love to have you on to talk about this. But congratulations on your badge of honor. And what a great way to wrap up. A great show, Danny. Stepping up in the pocket with your top 10 offensive linemen. We want to thank our guest, Rick Saratella, for all of his great insight on the show tonight. And to everyone who listened live and joined us in the chat, we hope you enjoyed this week's show. If you can't join us live, you can find the podcast version of Draft on Tap the morning after the live show on all your favorite podcast streams. Thank you to Aldo Gandia for holding down the fort for us tonight and his great work on the interview with Rick. And a big shout out to the voice of the Barroom, none other than Dan Aguirre, for everything he's doing. And everyone else at Bears Barroom who continues to make the network as spectacular as it is. Join us next week for another episode of Draft on Tap. And good night, everybody.